from our studios in New York City and Miami, Florida. You are listening to The Striking Corner with Eric Rivera and Vinny Scotto.
What's going on, everybody? How's everybody doing today? We are here for another episode of The Striking Corner, and I am your host, Eric Rivera, and alongside me is, of course, Vinny Scotto. What's going on, bro?
What's up, man?
Everything good?
Awesome. Glad to be here again.
Yet again. We'll go more into that story in just a second, but before we do that, guys, remember to follow us on social media at strikingcorner.com is our main website where all of the episodes can be found, as well as all your podcasting outlets such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, you name it. As for our social media, Instagram at Striking Corner, Twitter at Striking Corner. My personal Instagram is Eric_Rivera_TSC. Vinny, how can they get in touch with you?
Via Instagram, which is at Vinny Scotto.
All right. And today's episode is brought to you by Fight City Muay Thai and Fitness. That is a 7 Pitts Bay Road, Hamilton, Bermuda. Owners are Chuck Morgan and Nikki Stout, and the programs they have there are ring-tested Muay Thai, specializing in transforming beginners to ring-ready athletes, and Thai boxing for fitness and weight loss. So once again, shout out to Fight City Muay Thai and Fitness. They've sponsored a couple of our episodes already. Shout out to Chuck Morgan and Nikki Stout all the way in Hamilton, Bermuda. Beautiful place to do the beautiful and brutal art of Muay Thai. So check them out, guys. And once again, thank you to them for their support. So yeah, Vinny said again, because technically we pretty much recorded most of the podcast yesterday. But I had an emergency.
Long story short, Eric's neighbor is an asshole.
Yeah, my neighbor
is. Which is kind of ironic because he lives next door to you and you are also an asshole.
Yeah, but I'm not the type of asshole that leaves beans or something cooking on the stove and then decides to go to Walmart. And then, I live in a townhouse which is connected to 3 other units. So his shit went up in flames and I was in the middle of the podcast and I basically had to get the hell out of here because the fire department came and told us that we had to evacuate. Thankfully, it wasn't anything major. It looks like it was just mostly smoke and not an open flame fire. It was just a lot of smoke damage for that guy. So, you know. Fuck him, I guess. But he could have burned down the entire, four units, 4 people's houses, so that including his own, but that would have been crazy. So we had to cut everything short, and we're back today, although we didn't want to be because Vinny hates when I cut into his, or possibly will end up cutting into his Game of Thrones time.
Yeah, man, there's only 2 episodes left. Let me live.
Yeah, I know. It's okay, man. It's okay.
Although, sadly enough, not sadly, because it's really awesome.
Yeah.
I started watching it over again from season 1, episode 1.
Oh, shit, really? I want to start doing that, but since
I'm trying to make sure that I didn't miss anything along the way.
Yeah. I can get that. I think... my wife does that a lot of times with like some of these shows, like Stranger Things, which was big, and like she'll watch like season 1 and 2 to get like back on track again. But that kind of happens when you've been out of it for a while, especially with Game of Thrones, because they were like 2 years out, right? They were like 2 years.
Yeah, and also season 1 was 8 years ago.
Exactly.
It was like 2011.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure you want to go back and just check stuff and everything. I mean, I haven't watched I watched season 1 was the only one I watched, and I really want to get back into it, but I have specific TV viewing principles, and I need to have a TV because my TV right now, my son broke my, I had a 65-inch, flat screen TV. It was brand new. It was only 2 months old,
cool.
and then he broke it.
You're so special with your big TV.
Yeah. It wasn't actually one of the fancy new ones or any of that shit, because I knew I knew that they were, my two kids were a danger enough not to go for one of those. What is those new ones? They're like those quartz LED ones. The QLED.
Yeah,
is that
QLED.
Yeah, they're like $2,000. I was like, nah, man, let me just get a regular LED TV because I knew something like this shit was going to happen. And it did. So I'm not going to.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
Enough about your TV. People want to hear about Muay Thai.
Okay. So Muay Thai, it's a cool sport, guys. It's comprised of, it's called the Science of Eight Limbs. And it's comprised of punches, kicks, knees, and elbows. It's Thai. It's from Thailand. Yeah. If you know the show, you should know Muay Thai. Anyway, guys, so today we actually have two very special guests on the show. Well, we had them yesterday, and now they're back, thankfully, again today. It is none other than Pam and Pete Peterson. Obviously, you guys that have been in the sport for, you know, and been competing know them very well. They are the owners and promoters of the TBAs, what we call the TBAs, or affectionately known as the TBAs, which is the biggest Muay Thai-only tournament here in the United States. It's done every year in Des Moines, Iowa. And, you know, they're going to – what's the next one? You're going to it, right, Vin? When's the July,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm going. It's the weekend of June 20th.
June 20th, yeah. So that would be the next one. I went many years ago. I went competed there in 2011. It's gotten way bigger since, and we'll talk about that on the podcast. So it's really a great event. I'm sorry, a great tournament. And besides that, obviously Pete Peterson has been involved in the sport for a long time. He's reffed for the USMF. He's traveled overseas also with the national team. And, you know, he's been involved in Muay Thai for a long time, so he has a lot of knowledge to drop there. So we are very happy to have him on the podcast, and we'll be right back with Pam and Pete Peterson.
The Striking Corner.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Striking Corner podcast. And as we had mentioned at the beginning of our show, we have two very special guests today, and I think everybody that's in the Muay Thai world will know them and know them well as... probably a lot of you have competed in the tournament, which I would like to say is the most organized tournament that I've been to and the biggest Muay Thai only tournament in the United States. And that is the TBA Muay Thai World Expo. Is that what you guys are calling it now? Is that what it's called now?
The TBA Classic Muay Thai World Expo. Oh, okay. We had to change our name a couple of years ago.
Yeah, yeah, I know why. But so it's none other than Pam and Pete Peterson. How are you guys doing today?
Wonderful. Doing
great.
Yeah, so it's awesome to have you both on here. Really, you know what? I guess to get everybody started. So everybody, I mean, a lot of people obviously know you guys have competed at this tournament, which is without a doubt, like I said, for me, it's the most organized. It's the biggest now when it's, you know, thinking about Muay Thai only. It's the one that pretty much I think sets the bar, really. And I wanted to talk to you guys about really how it all got started. Like, when did you guys come up with this idea to do a Muay Thai tournament? And I, you know, I want to go out on a limb and say this because I'm from Florida, Vinny's from New York, and then, you know, we have a lot of people out there in California, in the Midwest of all places, in Des Moines. You know, it's kind of out of the ways for a lot of people, but you guys still do it and make it happen, and it's a big thing. And so how did it come to be? How did this happen?
You want me to start?
Go ahead.
Whoever wants to take it.
Well, I moved to Des Moines in 2001, mm-hmm. late 2001, I believe it was. And I was already promoting shows in Illinois where I was from, kickboxing, Muay Thai, some boxing. Just we kind of mixed up the bouts. And so when I moved there and Pam and I met, and fast forward to 2003, mm-hmm. we had a team going again. And, you know, then all we could compete on was these gotta come off. I can't wear these things. Was shows like tournaments that had all the rule styles, you know, kickboxing, above the waist, international, and Muay Thai. And so we needed something that was Muay Thai only. So we were at a seminar in Minnesota with Ajahn Chai in 2006. And I asked him, since he trains a lot of champions and there's a lot of TBA guys in the country, you know, why the TBA is not sanctioning fights or organizing an organization to sanction fights and do Muay Thai tournaments. Mm-hmm. In his best tone, I can give impression of him is, so you set up fight? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, suppose you do it. So that was kind of how it started. And Pam went back home and talked about it. And it took us a year to get it going. But 2007 was the inaugural event, and it went from there. And the whole thing here was, for us, was to have an event that was Muay Thai only. You know, we were tired of giving up rule sets to meet someone in the middle at international rules or whatever. And no one was doing that at the time. So we went for it. And we had a good TBA following. And I think it was primarily TBA in the beginning, wasn't it, Pam? Except for a few gyms. Yeah. And but it quickly grew with the spread of the word. I think, as you said, Eric, because Pam has it so organized, and the level of competition for Muay Thai then was crazy good. For the first few years, many joked it was the Canadian Nationals because Canada was kicking our asses.
Yeah.
And but that quickly turned around, and you know, now fast forward to this year, 2018 was 800 registered over that.
840, I think it was.
Yeah, and we're over 7 now. So I mean, that's a substantial growth from just over right at 100 our first year in 07.
What are you expecting the total to be this year?
If we stay on schedule, we should be somewhere around 900.
Nice.
Definitely. Yeah. So, I mean, just, you know, just for perspective, I think when I competed in the tournament, I think there was maybe like 400 athletes at that time, and it was still packed. And like we were talking off air, it used to be in a different venue. And now, I mean, and it was actually a shorter tournament in the sense that it was less days. I know you guys are doing more days now, and obviously, and you have more rings. It's just been such a big thing. And you were joking around when it was Canadian Nationals, because I remember doing the tournament, and I think for the Canadians, it's because it's kind of like a straight shot down for them, right? A drive for a lot of them from Toronto. It's pretty close. Sure. It's not close, but I'm saying it's kind of an easier drive for a lot of them to do it.
Did you get beat by a Canadian when you were there?
Oh God, he loves to do this shit. I didn't get beat by a Canadian when I was there. No, I did not. Okay. That was at a different tournament, but yes. our good friend Christian did. I remember it. I mean, it's just also because of the Toronto teams, you know, Ajahn Suchard, the teams that he has. Well, the teams that broke off from Siam number one, there's like so many of them too. But I just remember they definitely were like a force to be reckoned with at that time.
The ballroom we were in when you were here, I think did we have 3 rings?
Yeah, you had 3 rings.
3 rings in that area. They've added an event center to that hotel. So now that ballroom is now the warm-up area.
Oh.
And now they have a 12,000 square foot ballroom that we use for 4 rings. And then the smaller 8,000 square foot ballroom is the warm-up area.
Yeah. Okay.
Nice.
And all right, so I know this would be, it's probably a loaded question. And Pam, like I said, you know, I always, the one thing I harp on about the TBA is I really think it's very organized and well put together. I think one of the things that I remember from a lot of people was just how, you know, how the, and this is comparing to other tournaments that I went to and have been to, was the weigh-in process and how sort of it was, I wouldn't say effortless, but it was definitely a lot easier than I've seen in other places. And it was just way more organized, and it was just way better. And people, I wouldn't say people enjoy weigh-ins, but it just seemed like it was easier for them to get it out of the way and not struggle through that whole process, you know. But, the loaded question I wanted to ask was, talk to us a little bit about, you know, putting something like this together, the logistics. I know it's probably a long answer, but... You know, what goes into something like this? You know, you guys have been doing it for so long. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, the preparation for this, for the event.
Well, a lot of alcohol goes into it.
That's true.
Back then, I didn't start as early as I do now, but now because of the numbers, we start already. I mean, I'm already working on next year right now.
Mm.
So okay. I'm working quite a ways out. I handle most of the stuff up until about the last month. Yeah. And then I've got a group of girls that have been with us pretty much the whole entire time that they've, you know, they were teenagers at that point. Now they're, you know, mid 20s to mid early 30s, more responsible now. And they help me do a lot of the stuff. They know the parts, they know it. And that's really, I think I give a lot of credit to what I call my Muay Thai minions. they help me take over with things and they know what to do. And I don't have to start training somebody new every year.
Very nice. Very nice.
Well, what is the part of putting it together that you dislike the most?
The part that I dislike?
Yes. There's got to be something.
I'm going to toss the dog towards Pete. Hang on a second.
If you don't want to say it, I'll say it.
Let's say it, Pete. Let's hear it.
For me, I don't deal with them. Pam deals with most of them, but I hear the feedback from her and the questions from her. And, you know, we collaborate once in a while on how to handle it, but everybody wants to win. And I get that, but like any other tournament, we have sandbaggers,
of course,
and we have parents that are living through their children and are trying so hard to get them in the easiest bracket.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how many nights Pam is up till 2 and 3 in the morning, handling emails, phone calls with parents, coaches, parents, even young teenage fighters that try and handle it themselves. And it's just crazy. That's the part that I hear her getting most frustrated about.
Yeah.
Yeah. The most frustrating, I always say there's no stupid questions, but that last month I kind of reneged on that a little bit.
That is such a terrible statement. There is that. And I learned that the second that I started coaching Muay Thai, that there are so many stupid questions.
Well, I think there's a lot of dumb questions unfortunately, in the Muay Thai community from some people and other. Like, I mean, we were discussing it in the last podcast a little bit about, you know, there's kind of a sense of entitlement and I should be able to do, you know, like we were talking about, like the USMF and who makes the team, which I know for you guys, I mean, for the USMF looks at the TBA as one of the qualifiers, basically, you know, who wins and who does well there is a big deal. But it's pretty much like, you know, I think a lot of people definitely think they belong. Some people think they belong on that team, but they might, you know, and they might not do that well in the TBAs. And like you said, yeah, there is a lot of people that sandbag. And that was the one thing I think I appreciated going back, because, and I think, Pam, you do a great job of this, going back to when I went to the tournament years ago. Just the fact that you guys really do a lot of work and due diligence in order to make sure that people are not sandbagging, they're not lying about their records. You guys call them out when they do, you know, oh, we found out that you did this, this, and this. You know, it's kind of like something that, thankfully it's good, though, is I think at that time, I'm going to date myself a little bit, but I think at that time social media wasn't as widespread. Now it's, you know, now I think it's a little more difficult for people to bullshit because a lot of people can call them out on it. But yeah, I mean, that was the one thing that I think I really appreciated from you guys was just kind of like not letting those people get, you know, because there's a lot of people that do that, you know, and not letting them do that and calling them out on it was a great thing.
In the 12 years, I think we've only had like two teams that I can think of right off, maybe a third one, mm-hmm. that was really bad. Mm-hmm. Here a couple of years ago, we had one that we found out during the event that they were sandbagging. So we had to take care of that one. Mm-hmm. And I probably right around the time you were here, we had one from in the Michigan area. I know that we had to call it out. But that became a fiasco.
Yeah.
But I think that was pretty much it. I did DQ one Canadian team one time for their juniors, and that was more, you know, that's the frustrating part, I guess. When I've got the evidence and I even send them the evidence and they still try to go ahead and talk their way around it and explain why you shouldn't count it.
Yeah.
That's probably the most frustrating. But we do have a research team that they go ahead and we start checking them out. The teams that have been coming that we know we can trust, you know, we glance over them, but those new teams we'll go ahead and dig into. And it seems like there's this pattern too. When you look in a C-class division and there's somebody with a losing record at right at three fights. Yeah. Those ones, we always check those out. We always check them out. But that's usually, it's, I think they think if they register with a losing record, we're not going to look at them.
Ah, I gotcha. I gotcha.
Most of the ones that we have had the issues with actually registered with a losing record. So that's not going to get them by.
I just don't understand it. Like, what do you get out of that? Like, do you really feel a sense of accomplishment by going into a division that you don't belong in and winning? Like, what is the point?
That's my question.
I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me.
Some of it's the trainers, though. Like, we had one guy 1 year. He earned a lot of respect from me. He was with a team the prior year. He won the C division. And the next year, he had switched gyms. And he got a hold of me and he said, hey, I want to compete again. Here's the situation. The last gym, my trainer told me to lie about my record. I won the belt, but I don't feel right keeping it. He goes, I want to give it back to you and Pete. He goes, I want to register in the right division. I want to win the belt, honestly.
Yeah.
So that was good. I mean, he didn't have to, but he did. What?
I would shake his hand.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
definitely.
That's what martial arts is all about.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
yeah.
Not everyone knows that.
Yeah. No, and I'm pretty sure, like, I don't know what it is. I think, I'm not going to say it's only... Like, I always joke around when we joke around about, like, the MMA mentality and things like that. I think what it is, too, is just a lot of people, like I said, it's, like, either entitlement or they want this quick sort of they need the validation or they want what do we usually say, Vin? It's they want the results quickly. So they just want to jump faster than they really need to. Yeah, instant gratification. They just want to – it's like – they want to get, for some reason, it's almost weird to me where they want to, if they're C class, they want to be B class way too fast or A class way too quickly. Or even, and that's the issue we discuss a lot of times is like how big of a deal it is to be pro, you know, quote unquote pro, and to use that term. And now it's starting that, you know, with a lot of the Muay Thai community that knows, you know, that we talk about on the podcast and with the guys that are going to USMF and things like that, a lot of them are really trying to tell the students, listen, stay amateur longer, compete as much as you can as an amateur, because pro is really not where it's at. You know, it's very difficult to find fights, at least in America, once you go pro, it's difficult. And I'm pretty sure you guys know that, because I remember, Pete, you know, you guys were doing, are you still doing those round kick promotions? But I mean, I remember it was, you know, you guys would do pro fights and stuff like that at one point.
Yeah, we do, just not as often anymore.
Yeah. It's so many people just want to jump levels very quickly, and they don't realize that, you know, there's just not the opportunity to do that. Now they're starting to realize, you know, staying amateur longer might be the best route. And that's what's kind of helping us grow the sport a little bit.
And, you know, we were talking, it's not just here either. We were talking to, when I was in, it was Bangkok or Cancun the last time for the IFMA, talking to the Belarus team and one of the officials from Belarus. And he was saying how the pros there are getting maybe 2 to 3 pro fights a year. But they're padding up and doing amateur IFMA style tournaments, and they're getting 18 to 25 fights per year doing that with their, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 bouts in a tournament. Yeah. So, you know, as you know, with IFMA, you can be pro and be in the A class, obviously. Mm-hmm. So they're fighting more amateur style rules fights than they are pro fights, even though they're pro. Mm-hmm. And it's like that in a lot of the countries. And here, we just are so messed up. We're so in the stigma of, I got paid, I should be a pro, I can never fight amateur again. And yeah. It's not on the experience level. It's on the pay or not paid thing, you know?
Yeah, well, exactly.
That also, I mean, we've talked about this before. It also goes back to state commissions and all that, because I've been working with, you know, the New York State Athletic Commission, because I, you know, I was talking to them about getting the YDL going here and everything. And I asked them the question. I said, listen, I said, in the future, if we have a pro fighter and an amateur fighter and we want to match them up, but they both wear full gear and there's no purse, I said, will they be allowed to fight? And the commission was like, no, a pro can never fight an amateur regardless of gear or purse. So it's just how it is in this country, because I don't know why it's set up that way, but it's just the way it is. And that's where we run into issues, and why a lot of the coaches and the USMF and everybody saying stay amateur longer, because once you go pro, you're not going to be able to go back and get that experience that's required.
Right.
So I don't know if you guys are know, but our Class A is actually an open class. Pros can compete in our Class A.
So your state now, how is it? Do you have to go through the athletic commission, or is it like a wild, wild west where like the commission doesn't really care about Muay Thai?
Our commission really appreciates us because he knows that he's been to our events. He's been there when we've had pro shows. Amateur Muay Thai is not overseen by the commission. He's seen all how we run shows. So he's given us free rein on that. We went and had a meeting with him and explained how USMF is, you know, trying to put some of the pros in on their Class A team and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So he gave us permission to go ahead and open up our Class A. So some of these pro MMA guys or some of these newly, I mean, obviously we don't want somebody with a lot of experience coming in there, but these new Muay Thai fighters that have just turned pro and are looking for fights, they can still go ahead and compete in it.
Oh, for the guys who went pro too soon and need more experience.
Yes.
Yes.
So is that happening at this year's tournament?
Yep.
Yes.
We started it last year at the Red Gear.
And you've gotten pros registered already?
I don't think we have anybody this year, but that also goes ahead and includes like the people that go to Thailand. There's no amateur fight in Thailand, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so the ones that are fighting in Thailand, it gives them a chance to come back too and not be considered pro.
But that's something too. People complain once in a while about, well, so-and-so in my bracket went to Thailand. He had a fight there. He should be in A class automatically. You're not be able to, he's a pro, right? No, because you have one fight that's make you Superman.
Yeah.
I mean,
Who's that fight against? Because Thai's different. Thailand's
against.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's just the stigma is over Thailand. You know, you fought there. You're all of a sudden a badass.
Yeah. It's funny because that might have been, I don't even know if that was always the case, but I would say that might have been the case years ago when, you know, there were gyms that foreigners weren't allowed to go to and there wasn't, you know, a huge influx of foreigners training at Thai gyms. So you really had, I would say you had more of a, if you were going there, you were going to probably face somebody hardcore. But now a lot of these Thai gyms, you know, they don't want you to get your ass kicked because you might not come back. So they kind of make it almost like by tourist attraction, you know, like let's just put you with a guy that we know you could probably beat. And, you know, and that's how it works. So now it's a lot of these days, you know, going over there, unless you're fighting somebody ranked in a stadium, you know, you're really, you know, you can really take that with a grain of salt these days, you know. And I think a lot of people that are in the know, which is, you know, something I, you know, people that listen to us and I hope are continuing to listen to us and learn, I guess, as we continue doing this podcast, is that, that Thailand is no longer, if somebody tells you they went to Thailand and fought, you know, you got to take that with a grain of salt because that doesn't automatically mean they are a world beater. And they're probably not. If they were, you'd probably know their name.
If they went to Thailand and went 5-0, they probably fought cab drivers.
pretty much.
Probably so.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I get it. And so, but that's awesome. You know, I didn't realize that, Pam, as you mentioned it, that's great that you guys, so that started happening last year. So now the pros that, let's say, you, as we said, pros that go, that went pro too early or that are pros and can't really get pro fights here in the States, can, you know, go to A class and fight in A class. But the funny thing is you were just saying, and that stood out to me was that you haven't had any pros sign up yet, right?
We did at the Rev Gear.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know because I haven't looked through, I guess, who's actually checked the box saying they're pro.
Yeah.
So nobody has stood out, but I do know that we get a few pro MMA guys.
Oh, got you. Yeah, because sometimes I always feel like the other thing about pros is, and there are not all of them are like this, but it's that attitude, that sort of attitude that, oh, I'm not going to fight with gear and all this kind of thing. You know, this whole thing that we've kind of had that conversation where it's like, you know, you guys got to get over yourselves too. You know, some of these people.
Well, you know, part of the problem is like, I don't know if you want to call it a problem, but part of the thing is in states like New York, you know, you start fighting amateur and by your third amateur fight, you can fight with no gear except elbow pads. So if you only had two or three fights with gear, Now you're a pro. Hopefully you've had at least 20 or 30 fights total. You're going to go back to gear when you only fought like that twice. It's going to totally handicap you. So my thought process is, as an amateur, you should be always wearing gear, because that's what should separate amateur and pro. It should be gear, no gear, not fighting as an amateur with three fights and fighting no gear.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, just my two cents in that situation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just think the whole gear thing was kind of, now we're starting to see. And I would say that I used to have a different opinion as well. I used to want to be one of those guys that fought, you know, no shin pads, no headgear and everything like that. And I was really proud of it when I did. But, you know, now you realize that it's kind of, I guess it's kind of, I don't know, to me it's kind of dumb, because at the same time, you know, Pete, you went to, you know, you went to Worlds and you reffed at Worlds, right?
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, you go there and you see, like, these guys are absolute killers. Some of these guys have fought at Top King and these, you know, Kunlun and huge organizations, and they don't, I mean, they just, for some of them, a fight is a fight. I don't think they mind strapping on some shin pads and headgear and fighting. They just want to get the fight in, you know. They don't care. Those guys, they're doing it because they love doing it, or they know that it's, I just think it's, the mentality is a little bit different, is where we're sort of kind of reshape. I think the whole thing that we're doing here in America, you guys included, and then USMF and everything, is sort of, in a way, we're trying to kind of, how would I say, change the culture,
the rest of the world.
Change the culture that kind of, you know, that we had before, and try to put it more on, hey, we're trying to get you guys ready for world competition too. You know, here's your chance. We have, you know, this great tournament here where you can fight a lot of other Americans and Canadians that are very high level, and then get ready to face the world. You know, the other fighters from around the world who are definitely high level as well. So here's your shot, you know, and I think it's more of a structure now that we're trying to get them to rethink everything, you know. So, and I think it's a good job. I mean, I think it's a good thing that you guys are doing. But I want to go back to, I think one of the things I want to go back to, Pam, is that we kind of glossed over it a little bit, and you were saying that you were working on this year. You're already working on next year. So it's almost like a whole year-round thing for you guys, huh? To put one of these things together. You're always thinking about the TBA. You're always thinking about the Muay Thai Classic World Expo, World Classic Expo.
Just TBA Classic. It's my full-time
Everybody
job.
Calls it TBA.
It has become my full-time job between this one, and then we've added the Red Gear Tournament of Champions in October.
Mm-hmm.
So between the two of them, it is, I mean, I work a 40-hour week, and a lot of, as I get closer, they become 80-hour weeks easy.
Yeah.
Or more. But this is what I do all year long for those two tournaments, basically.
Yeah.
And then a few gym things, and if we do a rumble in there.
And I guess my question is, like you said, it's a full-time job, and you're trying to do everything to get it put together. I mean, what are the, give us a little bit of a timeline and how these things get put together, in the sense, do you know how do you get everything secured for it to happen? I mean, I know that you already have the venues and the things like that, but are these contracts that you've signed in advance for, like, oh, every year it's going to be the same time? Or, you know, how does it work for you guys to get the venue secured, you know, the refs and the officials and everything, and to make sure that it's running and you don't have any last minute surprises when the time does come around?
Are you planning a tournament?
No, I'm not planning a tournament. I think, you know what it is? I think, as a lot of people are interested, because, you know, oh, no, and you know what it is? I also feel like, and I remember this is one time when I tried to, I was like, hey, you know, telling Vinny, didn't we say we wanted to promote a show at one point during here in Florida when you were down here?
Yeah.
We were thinking about that.
A long time ago.
And then I remember at one time I was working with the guys from Take On, which they do Triumph Combat now in New York. And I remember I told them, you know, I was hey guys, I'm kind of interested in doing a promotion and both of them looked at me like dead straight, like dead stare at me, and were like, dude, don't do it. We're already too deep. Don't do it though. You know, and I just kind of want to, I think what it is I feel like a lot of times, and this is something that I've talked with other coaches as well, that have gone to promotions and fights, sometimes I feel like some promoters are in it for the right reasons. Some get a bad rap. And then I also feel like people don't understand the amount of work that goes into putting a show, the amount of crap you got to put up with, which I know, you know, we've discussed with different gyms and different egos, and the egos could be coaches and they could be fighters and they could be parents. And there's really a lot of things going on behind the scenes that make a show run, which is why I kind of want people to know like what happens. And in this case, you guys, like I said, your tournament is well respected. It's been running for a long time. It's organized. People like it. It's been doing well. And it's kind of like I said, it sets the standard. So, you know, how do you guys, I mean, what is, I would say, the timeline to get it done? And, you know, that's I think, the information that I think people would be interested in knowing.
So like with the venue, I've already got, I usually try to do contracts 4 to 5 years out. Mm-hmm. I signed contracts from 15 through 20, and I just received the contracts for 21 through 26. Mm-hmm. So I've got my dates. I post the dates. That way people are already aware of the dates.
Man, we're going to be old.
We will be. By the time we hit there, I'm going to be in my 60s. So, you know, we've built that pool. Like I said, I built that pool. So I'm still looking for people. Each year I reevaluate the tournament, figure out where we had problems. Every year we still have problems. We still have glitches. And thankfully, I don't think a lot of people see them. Mm-hmm. But I'm still looking throughout the year for extra people to pick up. Whether it's the checkout line or the check-in line, or, you know, just different areas that we're trying to tweak each year. And my paramedics, I'm always on the lookout for doctors, for medical staff, officials. You know, the TBSA, you know, has built a pretty good pool. And now that we've been working with Stefan also in USMF, you know, we're pulling in Vinny. You know, it's like we're pulling in all these new guys.
Oh, you screwed
that
up
are
there.
Awesome. Joel Beck.
You screwed up there. You just ruined the whole show.
But we're getting that, you know, developed. So I start posting, you know, as soon as the one is over, I start posting the new webs or working on the new pages, the registration pages and all of that stuff. Social media makes it really good now because it's easier to get out there. Mm-hmm. I actually have a handbook that kind of oversees saying, if you want to start a tournament, this is how you begin. Goes all the way through all the steps, has all the job duties of everybody, my timeline, when I need to order medals, when I need to order belts. You know, I have a graphic design degree, so I go ahead and I do all the graphic design stuff too. Mm. So designing the belts, designing the medals, designing the t-shirts, you know, there's a lot there for me. So that's kind of why it's a full-time job for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing everything. This year I'm actually going to go ahead and find somebody to help me with a website, try to update that because I know it's kind of clunky. I used to do websites, and then in the last few years, it's just become too much for me to do. Mm. And so I'm going to be doing a new website. But
nice.
It's just more of that administrative stuff too, reaching out to vendors, locating new vendors, renegotiating things with some of the sponsors. There's just a lot of little details. Mm-hmm. Even just organizing my back room. I have this guy who sets up and tears down the boxing rings for me. Mm-hmm. No names mentioned.
That's all and, I do.
You know, is his name Pete by any chance?
That following week after the tournament, all of the stuff comes back into the back room and it just gets thrown in there. Mm-hmm. So that can take me a couple of weeks to get back through there, get the inventory done on it, see what I have to replace. There's just a lot of little details in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That people don't even begin to think about.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. I can imagine.
Well, of course, a lot of that stuff comes with years of experience doing it. Probably the first one, you didn't think about it either. And then midway through, you realized you needed it.
Yep.
So
we learned a lot those first few years.
Yeah. So, I mean, I want to go, you know, I don't know this offhand. So, you know, when was the first ever TBA classic?
2007.
Gotcha.
Pete said that already.
No, he didn't. Oh, no, I said he... Yeah, I'm sorry, Vin. I don't pay as much attention.
Eric doesn't know how to add.
I'm ADD, bro. That's what
and
it
he
is.
He doesn't listen very well either.
Why? Well, yeah, that's
he
true.
He said that he had the conversation with a John Chai in 2006, and then it took a year to get off the ground. What does that bring you to?
2009. yeah. So I hope you guys didn't mention this because then I'll feel really stupid. But then how many people was the first tournament?
First tournament, we had 129 registered fighters.
All right. That's awesome.
Actually, like 99 that fought, right?
What?
99 that actually fought.
It was 96 that actually fought, and those are pretty much around the Midwest.
Oh, okay.
I would say it was probably, let me see, you were there in 2011, Eric. We hit 267 in 2011.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
When was the first Rev Gear tournament?
This will be our fourth year. So
fourth year.
What would that be? 16.
What is the major difference between the two?
The major difference is the
size.
TBA Classic. I almost called it the wrong thing there. TBA Classic it's just a tournament. And the belts that are awarded, we change them every year because they're similar to a trophy or a medal. Uh-huh. It's nothing defendable. The champion's awarded, just an extra big award. The tournament champions, what we wanted to do is the TBSA is a sanctioning body, and we want to start sanctioning more events. Mm-hmm. And we need to get more of our title holder spots filled. So the whole concept behind that was to have an event where we were awarding actual TBASA, I can't say it, defendable titles. So our A class gives a TBASA defendable title belt that they can defend throughout the year. If a promoter has a title defense bout on their event, we don't charge a sanctioning fee. And then we also give the current champions come back to defend their titles in October, and we give them a travel stipend to return. Right. So it's just kind of building up the TBSA and giving out, a few more of those title belts. And those are a little bit, we're starting to fill up some of the spots. But because it's a pro-am, it can now go to either an amateur or a pro fighter.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
Very cool.
And now, where does a TBASA sanction aside from Iowa?
Missouri, Nebraska, Minnesota, Oklahoma. We have done some in New York before they had those changes. And I'm trying to go ahead and get back into New York.
We went to Seattle.
We've gone to Washington, Wisconsin. Is that it? Iowa, of course.
Yeah. So mostly out in mostly the Midwest, pretty much.
Yeah, gotcha.
Most.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We did some in Florida, although we weren't aware of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, whole story. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Who did that?
No names mentioned, but we did gave them permission to go to the commission to get approved.
Yeah.
And give us a name.
After he was approved, we found out I had a promoter call me because he was having a hard time getting a hold of this guy. And I'm like, wait a minute here. We haven't sanctioned down there. So I started getting details. Turns out that this gentleman was saying he was sanctioning for us because he had the approval from the commission. And he was sanctioning after hours bouts in strip clubs where the strippers were the fighters.
Oh,
I am
wow.
So not surprised.
Did I say his name?
Yes.
No.
Why?
Sanctioned a couple somewhat legitimate shows, and he was just collecting the sanctioning fee and taking care of it. But then I also got hit because he wasn't filing the paperwork with the commission. So we got put on probation, and I had to get all that cleared up. But
Vinny, you can ask me when you're here or when we're in. I'll tell you.
Oh man, I need to know. I need to know too, because I am in Florida, so I need. I Eric probably know this person. I have
I
to
think
know.
He, actually,
he was
Eric,
Miami, wasn't he?
What?
Wasn't he in Miami?
Yes, he's in Miami.
Yeah, he was in Miami,
and I think he actually left. because he had a drug problem, and he's on the run from somebody.
Also not surprised.
I think I might know who it is, man.
And no one's heard from him since.
Oh, okay. All right, I might know who it is.
All of this taking place in Florida does not surprise me.
He's Florida. He's another Florida man. He's another Florida man. Florida man puts on Muay Thai fights in strip clubs. That's another headline right there.
say that again, Pete. I missed that.
His initials are KF.
KF.
Okay. Well, I'll message him later. Okay.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, I mean, that's funny. But yeah, because but you guys do, because the TBA does the you guys, or are they still doing that where they do the annual Ajahn Chah used to do this like annual retreat. Wasn't that up in like Washington at some point up there?
Oregon.
There you go. Gotcha. Yeah.
It still goes on. Yes.
Okay. Okay. But you guys don't sanction there?
That's a training camp.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Yeah, it's all instructional stuff. It's all 4 days of just training. It's nothing to do with any kind of competition.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess the other thing, and you know, this could be you, Pete. Obviously, you've been involved with the sport as well for a long time. I mean, really, I get excited. I mean, I get excited about, you know, the growth of Muay Thai and what we're seeing currently. You know, you've been in this game for a minute now. Tell us, you know, tell me what
New York
New York Minute. I mean, tell me, like, you know, how do you feel about all this stuff? Let me know, the USMF and everything that's been going on and these, you know, how the growth of the sport, you know, sometimes I think we, since we're very, like Vinny and I, since we're doing the Striking Corner and we're talking to a lot of people like yourself and the fighters and everything, I feel like I kind of always feel sort of a positivity and excitement about where Muay Thai is going. And then sometimes I talk to some people and they kind of get you, maybe they give you a reality check and you feel like it's not growing as much as you'd like. But I really feel like we are headed in a really positive direction. And, you know, like I said, since you've been training quite a long time, you've also been doing these shows for quite a long time. I mean, how you feel about all this? I mean, the growth, the USMF, all these things that are happening. You've been going to these world championships and seeing Team USA. You know, talk to me a little bit about, you know, your perspective on the growth of the sport and the new students, the new people that are getting attracted to the sport.
We have an hour. I'll make it short. So the growth of the sport, you know, when we started the tournament in 07, it was small. We've seen a lot of growth just from that alone. But from our perspective, it's been through the tournaments we've seen the growth. And it's been actually pretty tremendous. With that, though, you know, the area that's not grown as rapidly is the youth. And we've seen some growth there, but not like you would hope. You know, Patrick Rivera made a comment on a post here this past week regarding the YDL, Youth Development League, saying that, you know, every other sport has a youth league, little league, Tiny Tigers, T-ball, you know, you've got school basketball and all these sports, Mighty Might football teams where the youth can develop. And we have, you know, the youth, the elementary schools, the high schools, the college sports, right into the pros. And we're missing that element with Muay Thai until now. And I think that with the YDL emerging and it getting its foundation set, it's catching on fire pretty fast. And I firmly believe, and I'm not biased, it's not my thing, but I believe that it is the key to catapulting the growth of Muay Thai in this country. I believe that 100%. I was on board in the beginning. And but now that I've seen it, witnessed it, it's incredible, and it's catching fire across the country. But here's the thing: while that will grow, one of the things Ajahn Chah said to me many, many years ago was keep politics out of Muay Thai, and he's so right. And with the USMF in the last 3 years, really coming back on board with things, and Michael Corley being the president and getting things rolling again, he's a great man for the job. And we've seen a lot of beneficial things happening in Muay Thai this year because of the USMF, primarily with the Olympic team and the trials and that kind of thing, and selecting the team and getting the international exposure. But with that comes the YDL. And now with that, you know, the goal with the USMF is to unify everything. We know this. And that's been the big problem with the growth of Muay Thai in this country is all of the division. All of the sanctioning bodies are doing their own thing. And all of the 50 states are doing their own thing. There are some states you cannot have combative sports in, like Muay Thai or MMA. There are some that considered no amateur, only pro. There are some that, you know, the rules are all just different. Mm-hmm. We are fortunate in Iowa to be able to have free reign and let Muay Thai be true Muay Thai from kids on up. But so with USMF's goal of, you know, getting USOC approval down the road and then becoming the USA Boxing of Muay Thai, that will oversee all athletic commissions across the country so we can get on board and have one rule set. Now, the next task is getting all the sanctioning bodies on board for that as well. Mm-hmm. And that's a daunting task in itself. There's a lot of division there.
If that happens and then the USMF gets to bypass the state commissions, then in most state, I mean, they kind of are the sanctioning body at that point.
The USMF?
Yeah.
Yes and no. They're the federation, right? So, yes, they would actually be the sanctioning body or work with sanctioning bodies that are in that organization. But they would basically, because when you have USA Boxing in, Vinny, you might be right there. I'm not sure how Michael wants to do that. He's talked about once that approval is set that there still may be organizations that have Muay Thai that is not Olympic rule set.
Yeah.
But if you want to be Olympic rule set, you got to go through USMF.
Yeah.
And I believe Michael is going to actually work with various sanctioning bodies or establish regional heads. To help him facilitate this once it all gets approved. But the point is, we have to get to one rule set, or at least working together as teams among the 50 states, the sanction bodies, promotions, everything.
So, and speaking of rule set, I had this conversation with someone recently that I don't necessarily think the rule set is the issue, because if you look between all of these sanctioning bodies on paper, it's all the same rules, same criteria, or, you know, some things may be off by a little bit. I think what the biggest problem is education, is how educated the people are that are working for these sanctioning bodies. You know, the people who don't train Muay Thai, never train Muay Thai, and think they can judge and referee it. I think that's where the part of the biggest issue is. Yeah. Which is, you know, you guys are using all USMF approved officials and they're obviously all educated by the USMF. And I think that's part of the reason why you have, you know, you yourself are USMF and IFMA official. So you're very educated and you know what you're looking at. And everybody who follows in that path will do good. But most of these sanctioning bodies don't go to that length to do that. They mostly just say, you know, we know Muay Thai, this is how we do it, and this is it. And that's, yeah. I think that's where the problem comes in, education more than anything.
Yeah, I won't deny that. I won't argue that at all. You're 100% right. Also, it almost sounds like when I say we want one organization, one rules, all this, it's going to be a monopoly, and that's not what we want.
Oh, of course.
But at the same time, having all of the offshoots of things is difficult. For example, the YDL is taking off, correct? Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing. Now, if we get all of a sudden four or five different organizations wanting to do their own youth league, and they're not all following the same path, I think we're going to have an issue again. But if we get more people or more organizations jumping on board with a YDL, I think that will grow faster. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, and there already are other people trying to do their own youth leagues.
Yep.
And what I think is going to happen there is that people are going to go to the YDL. They're going to go to these other leagues, and they're going to notice the difference in the level of safety, the level of officiating, the level of everything. They're going to notice the difference, and they're going to go back to the YDL just because the way it's set up, it makes sense and it works.
Yeah. I agree with that too. I hope that is the case. And I think it's what will happen too. Some will go to the other ones for various reasons and then come back.
Yep.
You know, it's happened with our tournament as well over the years. We've had some venture off, which I want people to fight elsewhere too, but they realize, you know, what's good and what's not good, I guess. But overall, the growth, I think, is in the right direction.
Yeah.
We also have to realize, though, that Olympic Muay Thai is a very, very small portion of Muay Thai. You know, and this, we're not all going to make the team. The team, you got weight classes, and one person per weight class if that person's good enough. So it's not the biggest part of Muay Thai. So I don't want people to all of a sudden think Olympic Muay Thai is that's the main goal. It's a huge goal. But Muay Thai in general, educating the like you just said, educating the masses about Muay Thai. And I think with the YDL, it's a big, big factor, a big important thing that we educate everyone, the youth up. And I think the YDL will play a big part of that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's my take on it.
I mean, I agree. And you guys are doing like a YDL or something at the next TBA?
The Nationals,
yeah, the YDL Nationals, correct?
I just saw the belt that's going to be awarded to the winner of the YDL Nationals. It's pretty sick. You guys did a good job on that.
That's all Pam.
Pam, did you design that?
Yep.
Good job.
Yeah, that's awesome. Really nice. I think I agreed a lot with what you said in the sense, Pete, that I wasn't on board. I was on board with it at first. I mean, I'm sorry. I wasn't on board with it at first. Maybe I was just a little bit adamant about it and things like that. Because even there, like I said, back in the day, I was like really into this whole idea of, you know, fighting without shin pads and all this stuff. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to be a badass and all that type of thing. But now I'm realizing more and more, you know, with the IFMA rule sets and, you know, trying to get guys to compete overseas and all that. And I realized that it's better to sort of, I would rather gear up and not be behind the rest of the world, you know, when it comes to Muay Thai than, you know, for the sake of pride or trying to look like I'm cool, not wear gear, but then like, you know, the sport is passing us by on a world level, you know? Well, and I think that's kind of what, like I said, it was like we were talking about, yesterday, like as we had mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, there was an emergency I had to run out on. So thankfully, Pam and Pete could jump back on the call. But what I was saying yesterday was just basically I think it's a re-education, changing the culture of how we looked at things. And not everybody's going to be on board. You know, that's kind of the thing. Like we were talking about commissions and you were talking about, you know, the sanctioning bodies. And I feel like sometimes some of these sanctioning bodies might feel like, and I'm pretty sure there's been a lot of them and I've seen some of them, some sanctioning bodies or promoters might feel that the USMF is kind of dipping into their honeypot a little bit. But, you know, but that's not the idea of it. You know?
It's not the case either. Because. Yeah. If that does happen, you know, when that happens with the USOC and USMF kind of bypasses the commissions and becomes a sanctioning body or whatever it is that's going to happen there, the USMF is only going to be hosting IFMA style shows, Olympic shows. And yes, they are going to be fully padded, fully geared, because the idea is to get people fighting as often as possible. Mm-hmm. How can you fight once a month if you're fighting with no gear? You know, you're going to get banged up and you're going to have a short career. But the other sanctioning bodies or organizations will still coexist because not everybody's going to be on board. So there'll be the USMF hosting the shows that are IFMA style, and then there'll be the existing sanctioning bodies hosting the shows like the you know, like the Madison Square Garden Triumphs and the Warriors Cups that are the no gear shows where if that's what you want to do, go do it. Mm-hmm. Nobody's telling you have to do one or the other. You know, everyone is still going to coexist and there's more than enough for everyone to go around. So
I agree.
Yeah. And people just need to work together and my opinion, just educate themselves. That's it.
Yeah. No, I agree. I just feel like a lot of times the reality of the situation, though, as much as we want it to be everybody getting along, doesn't always go that way.
Of course not. Just like everyone thinks that we get along, but really, really, I don't like you at all.
Yeah, yeah. That's the truth. That's the one.
I see that.
But and going back to the YDL, I know a lot of people, you know, how you said you weren't on board. Most people aren't on board the second that they hear no head contact. I think that's the thing that turns people away. They hear no head contact. But at the end of the day, you have 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old kids. Their brains are still developing. Why do they need to get hit in the head? And what I've seen, because you know, ever since IFMA started growing and the USMF started growing, I started, you know, following those guidelines at my gym. And I noticed that when I don't allow them to spar with headgear, I mean, with head contact, they're developing their other weapons more than just becoming a headhunter. So you start working more on the body kicks. You start working more on the knees, the clinch. And you develop a well-rounded athlete rather than just a headhunter with punches. Mm-hmm. So that's right. And that to me, that's the benefit of it. So I agree with it.
No, yeah, because we had a it was Mark Beecher was the one that was like, ah, let's just go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, he was still on board with it, but he said he was on the fence on certain things. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be. You know, and then it was funny because I was actually watching a video the other day of, I mean, obviously this guy's a professional, which was Nicky Holtzkin. I don't know if you guys saw that he posted. He posted a video of his like training, and he's like beating the garbage out of his teammate. And I'm just like, wow, you know, because you know how there a lot of these things have come up recently. All the news that has come up recently about, you know, even MMA guys, even professional fighters, trying to say, you know, don't go hard in the gym. You know, save your brain cells, save it for the ring or the cage or whatever. But yeah, you know, there's still people that have that old school mindset and they're still going to do what they do. And I think, you know, I was looking at that and I was like, yeah, he definitely didn't get the memo for that. Yeah. But yeah, I love the whole idea of the YDL. I'm so on board with it now. And we're seeing it. I think we're seeing the, one of the things that we've talked about on this podcast is that I think you're seeing the fruits of all that labor, and we're just seeing the beginning of it. But you know, with the competition of the kids, we're starting to see these young fighters coming up. You know, I was talking to Vin the other day about, you know, like Nicole Fernandez, right? Is that her name? Nicole Fernandez is her last name. Yeah. I mean, she's just
Double Dose.
I mean, she's a beast, you know. Right. You have Tierra and Becca that were from that school. You know, there's so many. There's just so many really talented kids coming out of these, you know, and this is just the beginning of that sort of class of the YDL, you know.
Hey, Pam, do you have it separated that you know how many adult athletes and YDL athletes have registered so far?
Out of all of the numbers, there's approximately 70, 75 YDL.
Oh, wow. That's nice. Yeah.
That's good. And we still have 6 weeks to go. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah, now that I've released the image of the belt and stuff too, I think we'll get a few more in there. So,
yeah, kids are gonna want that belt.
Yeah, the eye on the prize—that's where it is. But but I mean, you know, I just wanted to, you know, thank you guys for coming on the show, for, you know, giving basically for also for that whole thing that happened yesterday, and then, you know, we had to switch up the times and come back again today. But I really appreciate everything that you guys are doing with the sport, with the TBAs. Like I said, Pam, I went many years ago to it. Vinny's gonna go for his first time now. Everything I always hear is positive. A lot of my friends, I would say, you know, Stefan is a guy that I consider a friend, and I know him very well. Mark DeLuca, like, I think as well. You know, all of them were people that, you know, Vinny and I have been very close with for many years, and we know that they they're in it for the right reasons, and you guys have them there, and the staff and everything is really are really people that are not only really knowledgeable about Muay Thai but very passionate about Muay Thai. So I always hear nothing but positive things, and it's, I really think it's the standard in the sense that people, if you win the TBA, it's like, oh yeah, you won the TBA. I think that's a big deal for a lot of people. You know, that's,
and it's, Eric also thanks you, Pam, for all the knowledge about tournament, because he actually texted me this morning and told me that he's planning his next tournament.
Yeah, yeah. So. And I actually figured out who you guys were talking about later on. I looked it up. And I remember, I know who it is exactly and everything. But yeah, it's.
There's been more than one, though.
yeah.
But Eric, I mean, like we were talking about, it's been, what, 8 years since you've been here?
Yeah.
You know, I know there was something earlier this year about you competing again.
I knew it had to pop up. It was going to pop up again sometime. Huh?
I even made you that offer. I would give you $1 a credit a day for every day you trained. And I mean, you could have had the registration fee paid for already.
He got zero credits. Zero credits.
Yeah. So what you need to do is you need to come up here and just hang out, watch for the weekend, just chill out.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Yeah. That'll vacation in Des Moines.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, that's something I want to do. I mean, I've told Vinny about going to different tournaments and things like that, and I hope I can do it. I mean, I definitely will try to get out there, because I also think the opportunities for more podcast material would be great after a few drinks and putting people on the mic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's something we definitely want to do, obviously, to have, you know, especially at a tournament like that, and talk to a lot of the different coaches and stuff and officials that we're friends with. So I may make my way out there. I was trying to go out to Thailand with Vinny, but I don't think that's going to happen. Des Moines a little bit easier. Des Moines a little bit easier to get to.
You could podcast right there at the tournament.
Yeah.
Well, we're scheduled to have an episode that weekend. So we'll have to see what we do about that.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll figure it out. I'm pretty sure I can do it. I just got to see with my job and everything if I can swing it. But yeah. But anyway, I just wanted to say thank you guys again for being on the show, and you know, for letting, like I said, Pam, for letting us into the world a little bit of what goes on behind the scenes of a tournament of this magnitude, and you know, really just, I would say congrats on your hard work and the things you've done. It's really paid off in making an event that people are actually, you know, people are stoked to go to it and compete, and they have fun when they're there. I mean, like I said, I always hear good things about it. So, you know, you guys are doing your thing, and but you're also helping the sport as well. So, you know, hats off to you.
it comes back to the fighters, really. I keep giving a lot of credit. I give a credit to them. If we didn't have such awesome fighters and trainers, it wouldn't be what it is. The atmosphere would be different. It would be a totally different kind of tournament.
It's all one big thing coming together. You know, it's not just Pam. It's not just the staff. It's them. It's the coaches, the fighters, the everything. It just all works together. It's a really, really awesome experience every weekend that year. I mean, every year that weekend, and it's surreal how far it's grown. A reunion for all those that still come from day one to now. It's just really, if a person's never been before, man, they got to go. Just the experience alone is amazing.
Yeah. And more so now, I feel like, because like we were saying, Pam, like, yes, I definitely do want to make it out there. But I just remember going there and putting, because like a lot, even on the podcast, even on this podcast, we have a lot of friends in the Muay Thai community. Some of them we know personally, and some of them we do not. But some of them, it's like we're really good friends with them virtually, pretty much, because that's how a lot of things work these days, you know. But going out there, it's like the Muay Thai community. The great thing about it is it's large, but it's small. It's still a family, and it's still very tight knit. And especially at the TBA, it's kind of like where you really feel like you're gonna run into everybody. And that's what I really like about it. And this was back when it was smaller, so I can't even imagine now. So, yeah, definitely. What you guys are doing is great for the sport, and it's growing it. And, you know, that's we're happy to have you. And, you know, like I said, thanks for coming on, and thank you for your continued hard work. And yeah, I'll try to make it out there. I know Vinny will be there.
Thanks for having us.
Muay Thai คือชีวิต. All right, everybody. So that was none other than Pam and Pete Peterson, of course, of the TBA sanctioning body, and obviously of the affectionately known as the TBAs, which is the biggest Muay Thai tournament in the U.S. And we were very happy to have them on. I think one of the things I very much wanted to stress when I was talking to them, and Vinny kind of ragged on me a little bit, was that I said he was asking me why I was asking so many questions about how to set up a tournament. But I think what it is basically because I want people to know. I think one of the things is that since Vinny and I now know a lot of the things that go on behind the scenes, and especially Vinny knows now too because he's doing a lot of stuff with the USMF and reffing and judging and getting into that. There is a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes, and I think sometimes sometimes promoters get a bad rep, or refs, or judges, and everybody thinks they're out for themselves, and they want to do certain things to get, you know, to screw other fighters. And I really think the reality is not maybe for certain commissions and stuff like that, but not in the USMF, and definitely like big organizations, like big tournaments such as the TBA. As you guys could hear on the podcast, you know, Pam's basically working on next year already. So it's pretty much a full-time job for them. So it's something that, you know, people have to take into account, that there is a lot of hard work behind the scenes in order to grow this sport. With that much said, Vinny, you have anything to add before we head out? I know you, we don't want to, you know, Game of Thrones time.
No, man, I'm good to go. You said it all as usual.
I said it all as usual and a little bit more. All right.
You probably said it twice.
Yeah. All right, guys. So remember, as always, you can catch us at strikingcorner.com. That is our main website where all of our episodes are. Of course, we are on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. We are on TuneIn. We are on Spotify. Anywhere you can find your podcast or you listen to your podcasts, we will be on there. Just look us up. For you guys that are on iTunes, please remember, we always tell you this, is just leave us a comment and a rating. That helps us a lot, especially in iTunes, which is pretty much where a lot of the podcasts are measured. A lot of people measure by how you do on iTunes, and to rank is something big. Obviously, we're not up there and ranked yet, but we would love to get there. So please leave us a comment and a rating. As always, our social media is on Instagram is at Striking Corner. On Twitter is at Striking Corner as well. My personal is Eric Rivera _TSC. And Vinny, how can they get in touch with you?
Instagram, which is at Vinny Scotto.
All right, guys. So that is another episode of the Striking Corner. Thank you, as always, for supporting and for continuing to listen to us drone on about Muay Thai and this sport that we love. But, you know, we're going to keep doing it as long as you guys keep listening. So thank you for the continued support. And that's it. We'll talk to you guys in another 2 weeks when we have another guest on. And, well, we'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Striking Corner with Eric Rivera and Vinny Scotto.